The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Not much to report in terms of developments. It's been a pretty quiet market, at least for the higher end players. So this episode, we are going to explore possible trade targets because it doesn't seem like the Red Sox are imminently going to sign any free agents, so we'll touch on this aspect of things. My name is Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jason Kelly. Jason, how are you?
Doing pretty well. It's a little dull here at the moment. Obviously, holidays kind of grinded everything to a halt, so no real news, as you said. But I guess that's to be expected. But now that we're into the new year, and you know, spring training's 2 months away, I'm hoping that we get a little more action going forward, and hopefully it's a little more Boston Red Sox action, because starting to worry that we might be done, boys. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but it's getting a little scary now.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into it, but we haven't even replaced Tyler O'Neill. So we're even more imbalanced than we were last year at the present time. So moves will definitely happen. It's just, will they be acceptable, you know, to the fan base and for what the rhetoric was in early November based on what Sam Kennedy was saying. So, so also a little bit of podcast news. Steve McGreevy is no longer with the podcast, and tonight we are going to be debuting the newest member. He will be basically serving in the same super utility role, so probably be hearing him, you know, over the course of the rest of the hot stove season, and then you know, throughout the season as needed in certain slots. So that gentleman is Evan K. Evan, how are you? Welcome to the team.
I appreciate that, Terry. I'm excited to be here. Excited to find my niche within the podcast and see what I can do to make, hopefully the Red Sox make some moves. I don't know. Maybe my voice can carry some weight eventually. Who knows? The world has seen crazier things. So, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm ready to get started.
Yeah, well, you picked the rowdiest crowd in the Red Sox podcast scene, so we definitely like to sling it on this crew, and there's really nobody else in our lane. You know, the way we do content, the rest of them are all kind of similar. So, so it's good to have you with us, and you're from Mass originally.
Yeah, I'm from right outside of Worcester, Massachusetts originally, and since then I've kind of moved all over, from Alaska to Texas, and you know, I'll be down in Florida in a couple months here, so just kind of bouncing around and doing everything I can to stay up to date with the Sox. You know, I've woken up late, woken up early, I've stayed up late, and you know, I've done what I had to do to catch every game, and it's definitely been a grind. So I'm looking forward to getting back to the Eastern time zone. Be able to watch the games on time and go to bed at a normal hour like a normal human.
How was Alaska?
In general, cold, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, but the matinee games, you know, the Sunday afternoon games, those are killer. I used to work overnight. So, you know, I get off work at 7 a.m. and the Sox are playing at what, 9? So, you know, trying to force yourself to stay up, you know, overdosing on coffee, caffeine, you know. But, you know, we made it happen. And, you know, I was 19 at the time, so it was definitely a lot easier than it would be now. So I'm thankful I don't have to do it anymore. But I recommend for sure.
I couldn't handle Maine, so, and I'm in South Carolina now. It's funny, I think Jason's the only host now north of the Mason-Dixon. Charlie's out west in the very, you know, warm climate, and I think I'm the next furthest north, actually, in South Carolina. I'm like the next one, so yeah, we all got the hell out, so... All right, well, anyway, we're going to get into some trade targets here. I tend to feel like that's the more realistic route at this point. I could be wrong, and I wouldn't hate being wrong, but it just doesn't seem like they're in a hurry to spend a lot of money. So, Jason, who's the first of your two trade targets?
So, the first guy I came up with, it's probably not as likely to happen, so I'm kind of leading him off, but I think he's a guy that would be perfect, especially at Fenway Park, and that's Eugenio Suarez from the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he had an interesting year last year because he had a wretched first half, only hit .216. The power numbers were down. Arizona at one point was benching him to play guys like Blaze Alexander because, look, they're a team that's trying to win. They're trying to go to the playoffs, so they were having a lot of problems with him, and I think he would have been very attainable by last year's deadline because he was just struggling so bad. In the second half, though, he caught fire, and, you know, he hit over .300 the rest of the way. The power numbers went way up, and he ended up having a typical Eugenio Suarez type of year, 30 home runs, hitting, you know, just around .250. That's who he's been through his whole career. So the reason why I would target him is because Arizona has Jordan Lawler knocking on the door. Now, he's a shortstop by trade, but he can play third base. Suarez is on the last year of his deal. So, you know, he's making $15 million. So if Arizona decided they wanted to go with a more of a youth movement and get Jordan Lawler more at-bats, Suarez is a guy that they could potentially move. However, the reason why I think it might be a little more unlikely is that they had a big-time power drain so far this offseason. They lost Christian Walker to the Houston Astros. He hit over 20 home runs for them last year, and they lost Jock Peterson to the Rangers. Both of those guys hit over 20 home runs for Arizona. The only other players who hit more than 20 home runs who are still with them are Ketel Marte, who's an MVP stud, Corbin Carroll, and Eugenio Suarez. So they may not be as willing to trade away their biggest or second biggest power bat behind Ketel Marte, given the guys they lost in free agency, but they do have a lot of youth coming through their system, and Jordan Lawler is a kid that they are very excited about. So I could see them at least picking up the phone and listening on a guy like Suarez. It might turn into you having to take on a guy like Jordan Montgomery as well, just to help facilitate the deal if they're really looking to dump salary. And, you know, I don't know if the Red Sox are willing to do that. They already have a lot of pitching, and, you know, Montgomery's only got 1 year left, but it's $25 million for a guy who can barely pitch out of the bullpen for the moment. So you might have to do something like that to facilitate it. But if you look at Suarez, like, his numbers all through his career, he's had good power numbers, and he's played in big ballparks. You know, Seattle was a big ballpark. He hit for power there. Now he went to, you know, Cincinnati as well. Cincinnati's a hitter's friendly park, but Arizona's a fairly big park, and he hits a lot of power there. And when you look at his advanced numbers, like, so at Fenway, it's a small sample size. He's only played 10 games, but he's hitting .425 in those 10 games at Fenway, and he's got four homers. So, and then you look at his spray chart from last year, he hit 30 home runs. Only two of them went to the opposite field. All the others were pretty much down the line left field. He is the true definition of a right-handed pull power hitter, which not only works at Fenway, but if you look at the American League in general, you know, you're going to be playing games in Tampa or wherever that new stadium is. It's going to be more of a spring training facility this year, but it'll work there. Yankee Stadium's a small park. It'll work there. Baltimore, they're moving that fence back in, so you'll be able to hit for power there. Houston's got the short porch. So a lot of the ballparks where you'd be playing Suarez, Fenway Park, and all those other smaller AL stadiums, that pull power is going to really suit him. He's a guy that if you trade for him, he could come here and hit 40 bombs. I really think he could. If he stays healthy and he plays all 162, which he typically can, he can hit 40. So I think he's an appealing option. If Arizona is willing to go that route, I would at least give them a call, because I don't think it's going to take a top five prospect. It might take someone in your top 10 if you're not taking Montgomery with you, But if you're willing to take Montgomery's money, then it's just a money dump. And then you're not giving up much at all. So that might be something the Red Sox want to consider. If they really can't get Bregman and they're going to lose out on other trade candidates that we'll talk about on this show, if Suarez is available, if the Diamondbacks say, hey, you know, if you're willing to take some of Montgomery and, you know, take some money off our hands, we'll facilitate a deal, I would do it. He can play third base if you need him to, but he can also just be a pure DH. I think him and Devers are pretty similar defensively. So I just think he'd be a good right-handed power bat, and it's low risk. He's got 1 year left on his deal. You're not taking on a massive contract where if he has a down year, you have to worry about being saddled with him for the next 2 to 3 years. It's one more year. That's it. So Suarez is a guy that I'd be very intrigued of. I would definitely call the Diamondbacks and just see what it would take. If they tell you, we're not giving up unless, you know, you give us like Christian Campbell or, you know, someone like that, or give us like Miguel Blaze, your number five prospect, then okay, hang up the phone. But if it's willing, you know, if they're willing to make a deal that isn't, you know, going to kill you, I would definitely do it.
Would you swap Willier straight up?
For Suarez, no. And the only reason I say that is because I look at a guy like Willier and I'd rather him be the headline of a package to get something much better, right? Like, and, you know, they already got Garrett Crochet. So, you know, I think they're done pitching wise, but I would rather have Willier, because I think Willier, if he gets at bats against left-handers, if Cora lets him do it, then he can prove he's a solid everyday gold glove right fielder. That's the kind of guy I want headlining a package for a like future cornerstone piece, like a Vlad Guerrero deal. Like that's what I prefer you send Abreu in. Abreu straight up for Suarez, I don't think I would do, just because of the age difference between the two. Again, Suarez had a wretched first half. He's a guy that, you know, one of the cons is you have to worry about, you know, he's hitting that age 32, 33 kind of region. Like, is he going to drop off a cliff? I mean, it can happen. So I don't think it will, but you do have to take that risk. I'm not sure I'm willing to give up a 26-year-old who just had, you know, a breakout season, for, you know, straight up for something like that. So I wouldn't give up Abreu, but I would listen on maybe some other guys. But I prefer to more do like a low-level prospects, you know, and maybe take on some money to get them.
I agree with you. I was just kind of curious where your stance was, how hard you were willing to go after Suarez outside of the prospects. I think that's an interesting name to bring up due to the fact that I kind of feel like the Diamondbacks kind of got, I don't know, put in a corner with Corbin Burnes, where they're faced with, you know, a top 10 pitcher in the major leagues looking to, you know, he approached them, you know, say, hey, here's my price. If you can meet that, I'm yours. I'm willing to take less money to be here because of my family, taxes, X, Y, and Z, whatever it may be. And this comes after their owner had already mentioned earlier this offseason, they're trying to cut payroll and they just added a $200 million player. So I can see them trying to dump one of their aging veterans. You know, he plays a corner. He's, you know, like you said, he's a DH or corner if he needs to be. So I think that's an interesting take I hadn't really thought about, but I think it's very possible, especially with Mike Hazen's connection over to Boston. I think, you know, I don't know how much that actually reaches, but, you know, it's just another part of the puzzle.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think I was really going to care for Suarez that much, but the more I look into him, the more viable he does seem. Jason went over the power numbers at Fenway. They're impressive. A big part of that was their series against us this past season, which took place from August 23rd through August 25th. And the Diamondbacks swept us. And that was essentially the final nail in the Red Sox coffin, really. On paper, it looked like a very winnable series for us. Maybe we could, you know, go on a run, but it went the opposite way. And a big part of that was Eugenio Suarez just absolutely destroying us. I thought he hit a grand slam in there. In fact, I think he did in the third game. Actually, it was that would have been the first game. My bad. But still, the power was there. It just, Fenway does look like a park that would suit him. And he would probably hit out of the three spot, I would think. Or actually, would he? I guess only if it was against righties. I'd want him hitting after Devers, ideally. So I guess that could be the three spot some nights, could be the four spot on some other nights. But as far as the trade package goes, I'm kind of with Jason. I wouldn't put a Willier type guy in there. I was wondering, I mean, we've got a surplus of pitchers. Would I put Priester or Fitz in there? And I'm not even sure I would do that. It's so tough. I would definitely put like a Vaughn Grissom type guy in there. I don't know if that would sway them at all. His value obviously isn't high, and it can certainly get a lot lower. But it's just really tough to put a value on him. The only thing that does give me a little bit of pause is the Diamondbacks did just trade for Josh Naylor, and then they signed Burns. So I don't know how likely they are to want to deal a guy like him despite being in his walk year. So I'm not sure, but he's an intriguing candidate.
Yeah, and like I said, that's why I feel like it leans more towards the unlikely category, especially with the power drain that they went through this offseason. And Josh Naylor has a little bit of power, but not as much as Christian Walker and Jock Peterson did. So it would probably take a little bit to get the deal done. But I just think him at Fenway Park for half the season would be pretty dynamite.
Who's your second player?
So the second guy that I would like to target, and this one I think you can absolutely pull off, it's Yandy Diaz from the Tampa Rays. You know, again, a little bit on the older side. He's 33 and has definitely slowed down a little bit, but still puts up consistent numbers every year with Tampa. And he's a guy who posts regularly, you know, doesn't spend a ton of time on the IL. He would probably just be a DH at this point. He really is not great in the field anymore. But he's a guy that he doesn't provide a ton of power, but he's just a solid all-around hitter. And he's a guy that teams still have to account for. You know, he's good with runners on base. You know, he's a disciplined hitter. So I like all of that about him. His Fenway Park numbers are great. Obviously, big sample size there. He plays at Fenway a lot, and he hits 316 there for his career. So it's a park that I think he would definitely like. And I think that he's more attainable than a guy like Suarez, because Tampa Bay, I mean, they're not even playing in their own stadium this year. You look at their payroll, their highest paid player is, I think, Josh Lowe, who's making like peanuts. I mean, they really don't have much. It's, you know, it's going to be like a more of a developmental year. Like, they're going to see what they can get out of some of their young pitching and see if anyone comes through the system. They're still kind of recovering from the whole Wander Franco thing too, because he was supposed to be ushering in the new era for them. And obviously that's not going to happen now. So, you know, they're hoping Caminero is going to be that guy, but he's still very young, very raw. So not even sure, like, he might have some ups and downs this year. I think Tampa has to be in a mode where they have to look at a guy like Yandy Diaz and say, yeah, it makes sense for us to part with him. And you know what? Obviously, you're dealing within the division, so that makes it a little complicated because, you know, you're going to try and put them over a barrel. They're going to try and put you over a barrel, try and get, like, a really good prospect for Diaz when you don't want to give up much for him because he is, you know, up there in age and, you know, he's not a big-time power hitter. So I'm not sure exactly what the deal would look like, but I don't think you're giving up a prospect that anyone's going to look at and go, oh my God, you gave up that guy? Like, oh man, you know, like it might be a guy like a Blaze Jordan or something, you know, someone who is kind of blocked at the moment because Blaze Jordan's a corner infielder. You got Devers and you got, you know, presumably Casas for the foreseeable future at the corners. So it might be a deal like that where you can just straight up give him a guy like that, get Yandy Diaz in here. He's your DH. Is he, you know, again, not a big time power threat, not as feared of a hitter as a guy like Suarez might be, but he's still a very productive hitter. He's a guy that you put him somewhere in this lineup, he's going to help facilitate your offense and, you know, hits righties and lefties equally well. So you don't have to worry about that. I just think that he's a good fit here, and I don't think it would take much to get him. So if you can't get the big fish like a Bregman, or you can't go out and trade for a guy like Suarez, I think Yandy Diaz would be a good guy to pivot to.
Evan?
You know, the Rays are such a fascinating organization to me because of the moves they decide to make. You know, you look back at the Paredes deal. He was 24, 25 when they dealt him. He wasn't making a ton of money yet. He seemed like a cornerstone piece. You know, we had heard about Isak Paredes for years coming up through various pipelines and whatnot. And then they just kind of traded him away for what seems like scraps. I can't recall the exact trade package off the top of my head, but, you know, he got shipped out. And then when I think of the Rays, I really think of swingman pitchers, like guys who go to the rotation, guys who go to the bullpen. They eventually are the closer for some reason. And then they're their ace the next year. You don't know where they came from. And a guy that really fits that mold to me is Josh Winkowski. I feel like Josh Winkowski has kind of sought his way out of Boston to a degree. I don't know if I can recall a single fan on Twitter or in person that's ever had a positive opinion of Josh Winkowski. He's a little bit older. I'm not 100% sure about his contract situation. I'm not sure if it's really a piece the Rays would want to do straight up, but I bet you could attach him to a Blaze Jordan or a lower tier prospect, or maybe even like a Dominican League guy, and just get Yandy over here for what seems like, again, peanuts, and you know, take a flyer to a degree. But again, he would be one of the safest flyers you could take, in my opinion. He walks, like you said, the contact. I can definitely envision Yandy Diaz in a Red Sox uniform for a few years here.
And I meant to point out, Diaz has he's got this year, he's going to make $10 million, and then he's a club option for $12 million in 2026, which the Rays will decline because they don't like to pay anyone $12 million to begin with. So I think his contract is one that they'd be willing to move on from because, again, with their whole stadium situation, like they already don't make any money as a franchise. They might go bankrupt this year because of that. So they're looking to shed any payroll they can.
So how many times in his career, without looking, do you think Yandy Diaz has struck out more than 100 times?
I don't see him as a big strikeout guy. So, I mean, he's been around, what, 6-7 years?
Going to be 33 this year.
I can't imagine it was more than twice.
Yeah, I was going to say two, maybe three.
He never has. Never struck out more than 100 times.
Wow.
The only thing is his Fenway numbers won't jump off the charts. His batting average and on base are well over 300 in both instances, but only three home runs. So you'd be getting a professional hitter, basically, a guy who's going to give you a great at bat. And I'd be all for it, especially if it was for at least 2 years. And I would give up something significant if the Rays wanted Richard Fitz or Quinn Priester. I would certainly entertain that. I may go with a Willy Abreu type guy. I don't know. That might hurt a little bit. But for 2 years of that kind of stability in the heart of your order, that would be phenomenal. He is a bad first baseman. I mean, he had a negative 1.4 defensive WAR last year. Casas was negative one the season before last when he was essentially healthy the whole time. So it's not a position where you're really, you know, super strong either way. But I would do it. You know, all problems with this roster. If it's a pyramid and you're working your way up, Yoshida is at the top of the pyramid. Every problem traces back to him when you're trying to realign something or make something fit. So, you know, we can do a whole show on how to get rid of Yoshida, but I would do it to make Diaz, you know, onto this roster. I would absolutely do it. And I don't think it would take a ton, but I would definitely give up more for him than I would Eugenio Suarez with the extra year of availability.
Yeah, I just think he's, like you said, a professional hitter, which this lineup could use more of that too. Guys who don't strike out that much, because that's another downside to Suarez that I didn't bring up, but he's a bit of a strikeout machine himself. So, and with Story and with Rafaela, like, this is a lineup that will strike out. So you bring in a guy like Diaz, going to offset that as well. I think that would really help.
Evan, who's your first trade target?
So my first trade target would be the ideal target to me, Brent Rooker. I think he slots into this lineup so perfectly. Whether he's hitting 2, 4, 5, I don't care, hit him ninth, I don't care. As long as he's hitting bombs at Fenway, I'm happy. Last year he hit .293 with 39 homers with a .927 OPS. He's only 30 years old. There's a lot of life left in those legs. He's kind of a late bloomer as a prospect. So, you know, the wear and tear on a traditional, you know, 30-year-old outfielder, it might be a little bit less. He's not making a ton of money. He's making $3.5 million over the next couple of years. He's 92nd percentile in hard hit rate. I mean, his defense is not great, but I mean, we were running out Yoshida 2 years ago in left field. So I don't think that Brett Rooker could be much worse than Yoshida. I would actually argue he'd be significantly better. I think this lineup, I preach into the choir, lacks a right-handed bat so desperately. I can't watch Rob Refsnyder be our go-to guy as a right-handed bat. I love Rob Refsnyder. I think he's a great asset, but he's a bench asset to me. He should not be playing every single day like he was towards the end of the year. And then you look at guys like Romy and a bunch of, I don't want to say quadruple A players because they've had some moments, but a bunch of movable pieces on the back end of that bench and the back end of that lineup that just need to be slid down a tier. And I think a guy like Brent Rooker could be a under the radar superstar type player. And I think the Athletics would be willing to move him for the right package. As far as a package for him goes, I think it would be rather steep, but it's still the Athletics we're dealing with at the end of the day. So I think they'd be more than willing to move a little bit of money and receive some money in return because they are trying to up their payroll for the year for the revenue sharing. So I included our number 5, our number 22, and our number 8, along with Yoshida. So hear me out. Yoelan Cespedes, shortstop, kind of utility player. He's still a few years out. I think that would be an interesting piece for the Athletics to take on, kind of fill in their gaps. They could kind of mold him to be who they need him to be. I know Jacob Wilson is slotted to come up this year, probably play a little bit of third for them. They could use a second baseman, shortstop, center field type gadget player in the next coming years when eventually they'll get good again, I think. Hopefully he could be a part of their next core. And then I put Blaze. Blaze is blocked by all accounts on this roster. You know, with Devers at third, Casas at first, and then, you know, all the first basemen we're trading for during this exercise. Blaze isn't going to see the field, and he's due. We've been hearing about Blaze Jordan since he was 15, hitting 500-foot home runs at Lone Depot Park. You know, it's time for Blaze to see major league action, and I think he would slot right in the Athletics lineup. There's not a whole lot of pop. He can go over there and strike out 200 times, and no one's even going to blink an eye about it. They're playing in a minor league park. He'll be plenty used to it. He's played about 1,000 games in minor league park. And then number 8 prospect, David Sandlin, be going over. It's going to hurt to part with an arm, but the Athletics, they're trading away a superstar. So they're going to need some value. I think David Sandlin's promising. I think his ceiling might be like a number 3. So it won't hurt too bad. We have the Priesters. We have the Fitz. We have the Dobbins. Cutter, you know, we have plenty of guys that can fill that back end role in the near future. So shipping off a guy like Sandlin hurts on paper, but I don't know how much of an impact he would genuinely have. And then Yoshida. Am I the only one who can see Yoshida in a Sacramento A's uniform? It just feels so perfect. It's on the West Coast. He's closer to home. They add money to get closer to their, you know, their minimum, bare minimum payroll they have to exceed. And he would play every day. Shoot, he'd probably play center field for the A's. I mean, you know, Yoshida would play every day, more than likely a DH, all jokes. But I can genuinely see a package like that getting the job done. And it is one of the few trades where I believe it would benefit both sides right now.
Yeah, I like Rooker a lot. He's a guy that he is a late bloomer. So a bit of a different scenario for him. You know, really didn't make it big until like 28 years old or something. So late bloomer, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Jaron Duran's a little bit of a late bloomer himself. And, you know, I personally consider him untradeable at this point. So nothing wrong with that. Obviously the power numbers are huge, and to have power numbers like that playing half your games in the Coliseum is pretty impressive as well. I think you bring a guy like that to Fenway Park, those power numbers will not only stay where they are, but they'll probably get better.
The only concern with him is the strikeouts, you know, almost 200 strikeouts, you know, back-to-back years. He is going to have his swings and misses. He's not, you know, a Yandy Diaz. He's not going to draw walks. You know, he wants to put the ball in play. But when he does, it's usually going pretty far. So, and then the other concern is the trade package. I like the one that you mentioned. I think that makes a lot of sense for both sides. Obviously, Oakland has to add some payroll. So shipping out Yoshida there, you have to. I mean, if you're bringing a guy like Brent Rooker, who's, you know, an outfielder slash DH, you can't keep Yoshida on this roster. And, you know, that's part of the whole idea of this show is that, you know, we're pretty much presuming Yoshida is not going to be on your opening day roster by hook or by crook. So I think shipping him out makes sense. I think giving up a guy like Blaze Jordan, who, again, I agree, he's just blocked in this organization. He's not going to have a chance. He'd have to completely change positions. And I also, he's starting to remind me of a little bit of like a Michael Chavis type, like, yeah, big power numbers at times in like double A, but that kid's going to go up to triple A and he's going to just start getting smoked. Like, I don't know. I'm not a big Blaze Jordan guy. I think he's ranked way too high, but that's partially why they should trade him, because take advantage of those prospect rankings. You know, if he's rated a little too high and a team wants to bite on it, go ahead, let them do it. You know, there were teams that probably thought Bobby Dalbec was going to be, you know, a 30 home run a year type of guy at some point. So take advantage of that, you know. And Oakland's, you know, they don't have their head completely screwed on straight. So why not, you know, see if they take a guy like that. If you have to give up one of your pitching prospects, if it's a guy like Sandlin, okay. I'd rather give up a guy like Sandlin than a guy like Priester, who I think they can actually turn him around and he can actually be part of your rotation in the future. He's, you know, still very young. Sandlin, I don't know. Any pitcher the Red Sox themselves drafted, I don't have a high amount of confidence in, because they just can't draft pitching. So I'd be okay with that. I think a package like that makes a lot of sense. You throw in a guy like Cespedes, one of your 18 million shortstops that Bloom drafted for you or whatever. So I'm fine with that. But it would be a package like that. You'd have to give up multiple players, multiple prospects. It would not be just, you know, oh, we'll give you Richard Fitz for Brent Rooker, and there you go. No, it's Oakland's, you know, they spent some money this offseason. So I think they're kind of signaling, like, it's not just us trying to get to the floor. We're looking at our division. The Angels are still a joke. Houston is kind of going backwards now. They're starting to blow it up. Seattle still has no offense. Like, we don't have to be a laughingstock anymore. We can actually, like, maybe finish fourth, maybe even third in our division, and we can start to build up some clout before we move to Vegas. So I think that they're slowly getting more serious. So you would have to give up quite a bit in a package to get a guy like Rooker, but you bring him in here, he's hitting 40 home runs at least at Fenway Park. So he's a great fit. It would take a bit to get him, but I'd be fine with it. You know, I think that he's well suited for Fenway. And, you know, if you want to be serious, you want to get that serious right-handed power bat, you got to give up something. We already saw him do it with the Crochet trade. Do you have the stomach to do it again? Is the question. I'm not sure they do, but if they did, Rooker would be the guy I'd want to go for.
And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting kind of tired of Adam Duvall, Hunter Renfroe, Tyler O'Neill, now probably Randall Grichuk. Like, can we just have a cornerstone guy that hits bombs? Like, why did we have Schwarber for 2 months? Why is Renfroe gone after a year, after having the season that he had? I'm ready for some continuity in the corner from the right side. That's all I'm asking for. And I think Rooker, he feels like a perfect candidate for me. And, I mean, we got Sandlin in that Schreiber deal last year. If we can turn John Schreiber into Brent Rooker to a degree, hey, that works for me. Good job, Craig.
If Breslow could pull this off, I owe a lot of apologies, because, I mean, this type of move isn't really on the radar. You know, I mentioned earlier on that, you know, I was skeptical about the Suarez deal because they turned around and just got Josh Naylor. So that suggests, okay, they're possibly trying to go for it. And then you look at the second half last year for Oakland, one of the best teams in baseball, won a ton of games, and they just spent money on Severino. So I don't know if they're going to be willing to make a deal. You guys have kind of mentioned players that aren't quite major league ready. I think they would need closer to major league ready guys, if not guys currently on the big league roster, to make that trade. I would do it. I would give up a very significant package. And Jason, you mentioned a couple of players that Rooker reminded you of as a late bloomer. The one that really stands out to me is JD Martinez. Didn't really break out with the Tigers until his age 28 season. And even then, it wasn't till, I think, what was it, his age 30 season, he got traded from the Tigers to the Diamondbacks, hit 30 home runs in 2 months, literally. And then we signed him, and that 5-year deal we gave to JD Martinez, when name another deal for a bat in free agency recently that was that good. You might have to go all the way back to Manny, and that's well over 20 years ago. So he does remind me a lot of a guy like JD. It's crazy he had 177 strikeouts last year with a 365 on base. Usually that number's way low if the strikeouts are way up. I'm a big Peter Fatsy guy. I think he could possibly tweak a couple of things, and you might see Rooker put the ball in play a little bit more than striking out. But I don't know. I would definitely give up something significant. I would definitely put Willy Abreu in that trade if it helped. One of my favorite things to do every day, one of my favorite mental exercises, is to try to figure out how to trade Tristan Casas. I would, if they're interested, he's going to Sacramento. He's a guy I would certainly move. I would definitely move Fitz or Priester or Cutter Crawford if that's what Oakland wanted. I might even, you know what? I've been tinkering with this. I don't think Bayo is untouchable to me. And typically when I think about moving him, I'm looking more at a Vladimir package, but I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't, you know, and maybe it'll come back. Maybe he will win a Cy Young, you know, 2 or 3 years from now. But I would give up something significant to do it. And 15 of his 39 home runs last year were in Oakland, in the Coliseum. Not an easy park to hit home runs in. So I would do it. I'm extremely open-minded as far as getting that done. But the one downside is you haven't seen any rumors. Like, there's no, you know, there's no Atlanta's calling Oakland. You know, they're frequent dance partners, those two teams. And you just don't hear any rumors about Rooker. So that's the one downside.
Yeah, I understand there's no rumors. And, you know, I like to try to think outside the box here, because, you know, I don't want to keep regurgitating the same names. It's going to make us go crazy. As far as Bayo goes, I this is a little bit off track, but I wouldn't move Bayo. I think we're going to see a different side of Bayo this year when he's not expected to be our two. He can be our four. And if our rotation is fully healthy, he can push being our five if we really had to. And I think when Bayo posts a 4-2 out of the four slot with games where he goes eight shut, and, you know, he looks like his ceiling, I think we're going to be a lot more pleased with Brian Bayo. But when our expectations are so high and he goes out and craps the bed for 2 months in a row, that's when we start to get impatient. But if he's our lower tier kind of a ceiling type of guy, and we can see his ceiling games at Yankee Stadium or, you know, in big matchups or even in the playoffs, I can see him doing well. You know, I think he'll become more of a fan favorite than he has been.
I'm not, like I said, it would take a lot for me to move him. I don't know if I would do it for Rooker, but The one guy he reminds me of, and I've mentioned this at least a couple of times, he might be Marcus Stroman 2.0. And if that's early Marcus Stroman,
I was just about to say that. Oh,
yeah, the personality isn't the same, thank goodness. But just from a performance standpoint, the strikeouts just aren't there. You know, and for a guy who throws 98, I mean, why aren't you punching guys out? It's just weird, but an early Marcus Stroman wouldn't be the worst thing ever, but he just hasn't lived up to the hype, and I don't know. We'll see. Who's your second guy, Evan?
All right. Well, we were talking about outside the box. Just going to put this out there. This is not going to happen, but I would be pleased if it did. Nico Hoerner. He's 28 years old, second baseman for the Cubs. Probably the weakest arm in baseball, but he gets it done defensively. 95th percentile in range factor. And then with the bat, he's weak. You know, 273, 7 home runs, 708 OPS. It's nothing that's going to get you excited. But if you can slide him in the lower portion of your order, he doesn't strike out. He has a 10.3 strikeout percentage. It's the 99th percentile, which I think this lineup could use a lot of. You know, he would just be a toolsy middle infield kind of bat, maybe like a Steven Drew on steroids type deal. I think every team needs a defensive wizard, and ours likes to break his hand and wrist and rib and dislocate his shoulder every 2 months. So I think pairing Story with a guy as toolsy and athletic as Nico Hoerner would be a fun duo. And, you know, I'm not sure the Cubs would move him because they do have that duo with Swanson right now. But I would definitely like to see a right-handed bat who can actually play defense in the middle infield. I don't feel overly confident about Sedan in the middle infield. I love him in the outfield, but I don't like seeing number 43 or now number 3 and the lineup card at shortstop or second base. So adding a middle infielder would be nice. And I understand that we have the Grissoms and the David Hamiltons and all those sort of guys, the Romies that can slot in. But Nico Hoerner is a staple defensively, and I don't see a reason why he wouldn't play every day over all those guys, obviously. As far as a package goes, this is difficult for me. Considering that I don't feel it's a realistic possibility, it's kind of hard to create a package. So I just kind of looked at where the Cubs are lacking, and that's the lower half of their rotation. So I just threw Cutter in there, but I think he's pretty interchangeable with pretty much anyone, you know, in the Priester tier, maybe like a Priester. And then, I don't know, Vaughn Grissom, David Hamilton, something like that. And then I don't know if they need another lower tier prospect on top of that. I'm just curious to hear you guys' thoughts.
So Hoerner I like because of the defense and the lack of strikeouts. That's definitely something that this team could use, both of those things, frankly. And I like that it fills your hole at second base, because I'm not convinced the Red Sox are going to give Christian Campbell a full chance to really win the second base job. I feel like they want to see more of him at the AAA level before giving him the position. I think Red Sox fans are jumping the gun way too much, saying that, oh, well, you know, Christian Campbell's going to hit 25 home runs with his team next year. Like, I don't even think he makes the club out of spring training. So I don't think the Red Sox are going to give him that chance. It's going to come down to Hamilton versus Grissom. In that case, I like Hamilton better, but I still think Hamilton kind of played above his skis a little bit last season, and then obviously he got hurt towards the end of the year. I'm not a believer in Vaughn Grissom. It just, you know, not until he actually proves it for more than half a season. So Hoerner would definitely fix your second base issue, because he can play every day. He's defensively very good. And, you know, yeah, he's a bottom of the lineup kind of bat, but your top end of the lineup should be good enough that you don't need him hitting, you know, 15, 20 home runs. He's not going to be that kind of guy. You know, if he's just able to, you know, not strike out, get on base a little bit, you know, kind of keep the chains moving, that's fine. So in that case, he's intriguing. As far as what you give up for him, yeah, you're probably looking at giving up pitching. I don't think Chicago has a ton in terms of pitching depth. It's Steele and then, you know, Imanaga and then a bunch of other guys. So they really need to beef up that rotation a little bit. I'm also not sure that Chicago wouldn't do the deal because I don't know what Chicago's really doing. Like, they lost Bellinger. They were shopping Suzuki at one point. You know, they signed Swanson to this massive contract. He had a bad year last year. They did that weird Christopher Morel swap for Paredes with Tampa, and then they flipped Paredes for Kyle Tucker. So I guess that was a good trade. Kyle Tucker's a good player, but now they're shopping Suzuki because of that. Like, so I have no idea what the Cubs' plan is, if they're actually, like, trying to contend or if they're just trying to shuffle some things around because they're just desperate to find something that's going to work. So they might look at a guy like Horner and say, yeah, actually, you know, he's been good for us. He's been in their system forever, but he's just not, you know, that's kind of who he is. He's a defensive guy who doesn't hit for power. And I wonder if the Cubs would be willing to just shake things up, you know, get a guy like Carter Crawford or a Richard Fitz in there to shake up their rotation a little bit and part with a guy like Nico Horner. So I think a deal like that they could definitely do. And if the Red Sox did it, I'd be fine with it, but I'd also kind of go, okay, like that's it. Nico Horner. I mean, again, like not a bad player, just not a guy that puts you over the edge either. You kind of stay the same team with him. So, and again, I think that, you know, Cora's a big David Hamilton guy. So I wonder if he would try to platoon those two, which he really shouldn't, but I think he would. I don't know. Horner would be interesting. I wouldn't hate it, but I would also kind of look at it and go, that better not be it. Like that better not be your right-handed bat, and then you're going to say you're done because that's not dynamic enough for what this team needs. So interesting player, solid player, but I would need a little bit more even if they did acquire him.
Honestly, I mean, he's probably my least favorite guy that we've gone through so far. But, you know, if you look at some of the data here, he does sort of fit the Red Sox brand of baseball. I mean, he stole 31 bags last year. That's significant. You know, Alex Cora is really into the dynamic base running. He had the most doubles of his career at 35, which is pretty significant. Season before that, he was at 27. They've ticked up the extra bases year over year. And, you know, he's 27. I mean, he's kind of, you know, entering his prime right now. I think he does fit the Red Sox personality in a lot of ways. You know, just the good contact hitting, keep the line moving, being athletic, breath of fresh air in terms of defense. Short window. I mean, I'm not a big Alex Bregman guy. And I've said over and over, if we give him a 5-year deal, am I going to go on this tirade about giving him that? No, I wouldn't. But would I rather have a guy like Horner for 2 years than Bregman for 5? Yeah, especially with Christian Campbell, you know, waiting in the wings. And, you know, if Campbell does come up at some point and starts crushing it, then Horner would be a flippable asset, you know, next winter for, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for, you know, maybe a top 8 to 12 prospect or whatever. But I could see it happening, and it's not what we want, obviously, but I think he'd be serviceable. And if this was like 15 years ago, He would be a great two-hole hitter, like in the Francona era when you had Ellsbury and Pedroia. I mean, he gets on base and he makes contact and he'll steal bags. That was that brand of baseball back then. In the 2020s, you're seeing a lot of your cornerstone power hitters, you know, in the two-hole nowadays. So, which is fine. I think I kind of like the old way better, but it is what it is. So that's how I feel about Horner. Any more thoughts?
As far as Horner goes, no. I think it would be pretty uninspiring until it was May, June, and we saw him making you know, double plays that we wouldn't have dreamed of seeing be executed last year, or, you know, get into a ball in the hole that none of our other options would probably get to. I think once we saw him fielding over a long period of time, I think it would be a little bit more exciting, but I'm not going to lie. If I saw that on Twitter tomorrow, I saw a breaking from Passan and it was, you know, Nico Hoerner to the Red Sox for X, Y, and Z, I'd just be kind of like, well, that's probably it. You know, hopefully Christian Campbell's good, you know. So, you know, I put him on there because he does feel a need. He's a little bit outside of the box. And like you were saying, he's a movable piece if Christian Campbell does pop. I think if we're going to add an infield piece, they need to be either tradable or versatile. And I think he's both. So that's why he's interesting to me. I have an honorable mention. I'm pretty sure he got DFA'd or something, but I mean, Brandon Rogers, I don't know, right-handed bat, can play two. I don't know. If you did ship out like a Grissom or a Hamilton in a deal and you just needed like a bench type bat, I know Brandon Rogers was like the next big thing about 5-6 years ago. I don't know. He's more of a name than, you know, a stat guy, but I don't know. I always kind of like Brandon Rogers, so maybe it's my bias talking.
Rogers is a guy that I actually brought up during one of our trade deadline shows this past summer. He was a guy that I said, you know, they could use someone at second base. He probably wouldn't take much, you know, in terms of a trade. Now he's a free agent, right? He's still out there. So I don't see why not. If you want some depth, I mean, he'll probably end up signing somewhere where he can play majority of the games. But if, you know, I don't know, if you want a guy who's pretty solid defensively and I think still has some life left in his bat, Rogers would be a good candidate.
Yeah, I actually got to see him. I went up to Colorado this year to watch the 3-game set at Coors, which maybe I want to throw up. Yes, I was at the 20-3 game. It was awful. You know, his numbers don't really show. I don't want to spend 20 minutes on Brendan Rodgers, but his numbers don't really show the type of player he is. And as cliche and dumb as that sounds, he's always where he needs to be. He's a hustle guy. He's their 7 hitter. He's a right-handed bat. He can hit the ball decently hard. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't hate it as like an auxiliary piece, maybe a spring training invite type deal. But anyway.
All right. So neither one of my guys are going to be extremely sexy here, but I think they would be serviceable. And the first guy I would look at currently plays for the Baltimore Orioles. I would see if they'd be willing to part with Ryan Mountcastle. I mean, his name came up a lot last July, not so much for the Red Sox, but in other, you know, in other trade rumors. He can play first base. He can DH. They did try him in the outfield a few years ago. He was horrendous. So he does kind of slot in very similarly to how a Yandy Diaz type guy would. Decent pop, only 13 home runs last year, but 2023 he hit 18. 2022 he hit 22 home runs. So a decent pop, career 265 guy, 316 on base. I'd be curious to see what, you know, he would do on a Peter Fatsy type program. Not the sexiest name, but I think you could slot him in there probably somewhere in the, probably in the 5 or 6 hole, depending on what the lineup looks like. And I think quietly you could have a, you know, a Tyler O'Neill type season without the strikeouts, by the way. I mean, the most, well, I guess if you go back to 2021 and 2, he did strike out 161 and 154 times, but those numbers came way down. In 423 at bats, he struck out 107 times. This past season with 50 more at bats, he actually only struck out 114 times. So not a huge strikeout guy in recent years, but someone I think you could trade for, and you're not giving up a ton for in that package.
Yeah, Mountcastle is an interesting candidate because, again, you're looking to trade within your division, and unlike Tampa, you're trading with a team that has World Series aspirations with Baltimore. So, you know, if they're going to give up a guy like Mountcastle, they're going to want someone like an Abreu back or a Carter Crawford back, someone that they can use right away. They'll probably want pitching after losing Corbin Burns. They're going to want to stabilize that rotation a little bit more. So maybe you try and, you know, do a Carter Crawford. Maybe you have to attach, you know, one of those shortstop prospects to it to make the deal happen. Because, again, Baltimore is not in the interest of doing you any favors. So they're going to want something like that in return. So you just have to be willing to part with that. And then, you know, with Mountcastle, are you concerned about the power drop? And is that just kind of a fluke? Is that because, you know, Baltimore screwed around with their ballpark and it screwed him up? Or, you know, is it just that he's not that big of a power hitter anymore? I can't imagine that's the case. He's still pretty young. I mean, he hasn't even hit age 30 yet. He's 27. So much like we talked about with some of these other players, like, he's entering his prime power years. And then you put him in Fenway Park with that left field wall, you might see, you know, a really good season out of him. Because even though the power went down last year, he still hit 30 doubles. So it's not like he's not hitting the ball hard. I like that he doesn't strike out a ton. He doesn't walk either, but he doesn't strike out a ton. So he puts the ball in play, which is certainly not a bad thing. So I like it. You know, if you gave me a choice between him or Yandy Diaz, I'd probably go Mountcastle just because he's 6 years younger. And I think that he's got more power potential still left in that bat. But then the trade package for Mountcastle is going to be much more expensive than it would be for a Yandy Diaz. So you're probably looking at a slightly painful trade if you want to go get a guy like Mountcastle. Because, again, Baltimore, they want to go to the World Series. And, you know, they want to step over you to get there. So if they're going to trade you, you know, one of their right-handed power bats, they're going to ask for a lot in return. So it would be interesting if they decide to get together and make a deal. But if, you know, if it was like that, like a Carter Crawford and a prospect for Ryan Mountcastle, I'd be pretty happy with that. Because I think you bring him to Fenway, you know, you just make him the DH, whatever, plays half his games at Fenway. I think that those power numbers would go right back up.
I honestly think you could possibly do it in a one-for-one for Crawford. I mean, Crawford, teams will look at him, especially with a few years left of control, and see a lot of value there. With Mountcastle, there's only 2 years remaining. So I don't think it would be too costly.
I mean, even better then. Yeah, if it's a one-for-one, I mean, you have pitching depth now, finally, at least at the major league level. So yeah, if it's one-for-one, I think I'd be pretty happy with that.
I don't know. I don't have any context on this. I wonder what his numbers look like next to Ref Snyder's. His ceiling for power is obviously higher than Ref Snyder's, but I think you might just be shipping off an asset to get a slightly more power-driven Rob Ref Snyder. You're just getting a better name, in my opinion. I don't hate Mountcastle. I just feel like you have that guy on the roster. And then, yeah, that's kind of where I'm going to go with that. I don't know if I would be willing to trade within the division, especially a guy like Cutter, who really just kind of broke out of his shell last year as a 30 start kind of guy. I don't know if I want to deal young, controllable pitching to the Orioles. I mean, they're cheap. They're not looking to sign anybody. And if they want to let their own roster burn and, you know, run out Ryan O'Hearn and Ryan Mountcastle in a platoon for the next 3 years and waste away Jackson Holliday and Gunnar Henderson and all that, not sign any pitchers. And they're not in the business doing us favors. I don't really want to do them a favor and take on a bat of theirs, but also ship them, you know, potentially a 4 or 5 arm, which, you know, they obviously don't want to spend money on. So I don't know. Mountcastle would be interesting, but I just feel like we kind of got Ryan Mountcastle at home, you know?
I was just looking at his splits, righties versus lefties. He definitely does hit left-handed hitting better for average. He hits right-handed pitching better for power. So, you know, I mean, he's balanced enough for me, I would say, but, you know, it just, for me, he's a really good insurance policy if you're going to lose a guy like Casas for an extended period of time. I mean, who's your first baseman? If he goes down tomorrow, who's playing first? That's just
nuts. Dom Smith. Come on.
Yeah, you could get him really cheap. Yeah, Russ Snyder played.
I got a guy. Bobby Dalbec. Yeah. Bring him back.
That's scary. I didn't think of it until now. I mean, if he does go down, who is it? There's no obvious answer in terms of serviceability right now. It can't be Yoshida. You can't just slot him out of there. So I don't know. And he's cheap and, you know, just a name that I don't think is going to hurt you at all, you know? So, all right. My next guy, I'm going to throw him out there one more time. I don't think the Red Sox really want him. And, but the good news is, nobody else wants him for some reason, and that's Nolan Arenado. If he went to the Astros, they would have been covering $15 million a year. I would still much rather do that than pay Alex Bregman, like I said previously. You would also get Arenado a lot cheaper than a Pete Alonso type guy who would get a pretty high average annual value over the course of 2 or 3 years. One thing I might try to do with Arenado is, and not just him, but Casas and Devers, I would put each of those players, I would DH them every third game. So Devers is still going to play 2 out of 3 games at first. Casas 2 out of 3. Oh, excuse me. I meant to say third for Devers. And then Casas will play 2 out of 3 at first. And then Arenado would play one game at third, one game at first, DH the other, and just kind of rotate them out like that. It would keep Devers healthy. Casas, I mean, he's not a platoon guy, but I don't think, you know, against a random lefty that maybe Arenado tends to crush, I might put Arenado in the lineup in that spot over Casas. So I'm just saying, I think you could make it work. And the big thing that I've preached about Arenado the last 6 to 8 weeks is leadership. Who's your leader right now? Because instantly it's going to be Nolan Arenado the minute he walks into the door. So I just love the fit. People will talk about the exit velocity coming down, the WRC plus, the OPS plus. He had the worst year of his career last year, but I think playing in Fenway in front of this crowd, I just think he would be re-energized. I don't think last year is going to define what the rest of his career is going to look like. You know, he's still 33, 34 years old. And like I've been saying, I don't need him to be the third place finisher he was in the MVP voting in 2021. I just need him to be Mike Lowell and to have that type of impact on this current roster. And I think he would. So I'm still a Nolan Arenado guy.
I'm not out on Arenado at all. The money doesn't bother me. The money goes down the final 2 years of his deal. It's actually pretty manageable. So I don't care about that part. St. Louis is looking to dump him. So I think you can get him for a reasonable price. I don't think it's going to be anything too outlandish. And, you know, he does fill that leadership role. Because right now your vocal leader is Trevor Story. And that's fine. I like Trevor Story is in that role because – he plays hard and he obviously cares about winning, but when you miss half the games or you're not there most of the season because you're on the IL, it's hard to be the vocal leader. This is the problem that Dustin Pedroia ran into late in his career. He still wanted to be the vocal leader, but he wasn't around. So it fell on deaf ears. And Devers is never going to be that guy. He's the quiet, just let me mash my 30 home runs a year and, you know, leave me alone kind of guy. I think Tristan Casas wishes it was him, but it's not. He's too much of a goofball, so can't be him. Can't be a guy like Duran because he
does things on and off the field that are still immature. So can't be him. So you've got a guy like Arenado in here. He would automatically become the leader of this team. And what's the one thing that's missing from Arenado's career? It's a World Series ring. The guy's going to be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. Most likely, his numbers are trending that way. He's missing a World Series ring. So, you know, and look, last year, St. Louis was so wretched that I don't blame him for having the worst year of his career. Things over there are going so badly. Like, they are in for a long and painful rebuild over there. So he's looking for a change of scenery. And I think you bring him here, you put him in this lineup, you have him playing at Fenway Park, I think it would rejuvenate him a little bit. Now, you're not, like Terry said, you're not going to get MVP candidate Nolan Arenado. But I think you'll get a better version than what you saw in St. Louis last year, at the very least. You'll probably get a little more power. Average will go up a little bit. He's still a good defender at third base, so you don't have to worry about that. And I just think on this team, that this is the kind of guy this team needs. They need a veteran leader who, you know, it's not all about him, right? It's about Devers. It's about Duran. You know, it's about, when he eventually gets here, Roman Anthony. It's about Christian Campbell when he eventually arrives. Like, Arenado has no problem taking a backseat to those guys in terms of, like, the stat sheets. He's just the guy that is going to kind of hold it together and keep the team on the rails and keep them focused, you know, heading towards the playoffs. Because this team, a lot of these guys don't know what it means to be a playoff team. It's, you know, they've been so far removed. You know, Jaren Duran doesn't know what it's like to play a playoff game. So a guy like Arenado will help in that regard tremendously. So I'm not off Arenado. If you were to ask me, do I prefer trading for Nolan Arenado or giving Alex Bregman a 5-year contract, I would rather trade for Nolan Arenado. And I get that Cora's a big Bregman guy, and Bregman might end up having a better season next year than Arenado, but I like that Arenado, it's just 3 more years, and then you're done, right? Because he'll be 36 by that point. Who knows what kind of player he'll be, you know, if he starts to decline, so be it. I'd rather trade for him now, you know, play out the final 2 years of his deal, and get that veteran leadership in here, because I think that's something this team really needs. So he checks all the boxes for me. Plays good defense, you know, veteran guy, and I don't think you have to give up a ton to get him. I really don't. St. Louis is looking like they're desperate to get out from under that money and just really jumpstart their rebuild. So I don't think it would take a ton. So I would definitely do that move.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely pro Arenado. You could also pitch it to John Henry as a marketing scheme. He could pull all the Rockies fans over. You know, we'd have two out of their three best players of the last decade. We're just missing Charlie Blackman, who's a free agent, I presume, or retired. So, you know, maybe we can pull over some Rocktober fans, recreate the magical scene that Coors Field used to produce. I've seen rumors that the Bregman deal is going to reach 8 years, and that makes me want to throw up a little bit. I like Alex Bregman. I do. And then the cheating thing happened, and I kind of took a step back, and I've never really came back to earth on my Alex Bregman take. I used to be a big Bregman guy, and I still like him. I've just never really fully recovered from that cheating scandal. And I understand that allegedly he had nothing to do with it. It's just more just bad juju coming to the Sox, and I don't think we need that. I think Arenado would fit the mold here pretty perfectly. You know, he can still give you 15 to 20 homers. He can play a solid third base. He's not a platinum glover like he used to be, but, you know, compared to Devers, he would look like, you know, prime Ripken. So, I mean, I'm all for it. I don't think it takes next to anything. I know a lot of people are hesitant and, you know, well, we don't want to trade with Heim because, you know, he's going to screw us, whatever. I don't care about all that. Heim's not the main guy over there. He's not calling all the shots. If St. Louis sees a deal they want to take, they're going to take it, whether Heim agrees with it or not. And I again, I'm sure he'll have some pull, but okay, so he takes your number, I don't know, I'm just pulling, making up a number, took 23 prospect or 18 prospect, and he ends up being a solid, you know, everyday right fielder in 5 years. Okay, you know, we're trying to win now. We have a young core coming up. I'm okay with giving up prospect capital to let Heim do Heim things in St. Louis. So,
Yeah, it's not going to take anything really, especially at this point. I mean, they just want to shed some payroll, and the Dodgers don't want him. Nobody wants him. Like, this is the perfect time to strike, really. And, you know, a lot of people thought Goldschmidt was trending down. And, you know, I've given this take recently, and then just out of nowhere in 2022, he wins the MVP. So that won't happen, but you could see a drastic resurgence. And this team needs identity. It needs star power, and you probably will get it with a couple of these young kids, but you can get it instantly with Nolan Arenado. If Nolan Arenado shows up to Fort Myers in Red Sox gear, man, my outlook just got so much better, man. And I don't know what's going to happen with Yoshida, but even if they straight up DFA'd him at some point in spring training, whether it's in February or March, it's not ideal, but the message that it sends to me is the Red Sox are hell-bent on winning, and they're hell-bent on getting the best nine guys into that lineup. That's what it says to me. So I hope it happens. It would happen if you got Arenado, because, you know, he'd be playing one of the corners. The other corner will end up playing DH. So it is what it is. So I've got nothing else. So we'll just kind of wrap on that, I guess. Tentatively, we'll be back Sunday. If anything develops, we could be back a little earlier. Eventually, some of these dominoes have to fall, and we'll see. I mean, we got the whole month of January, so these teams don't have a ton of urgency, but we'll see. So everyone have a great weekend. Take care.